Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to talk about cars and motorhomes and vehicle emissions and oil and tires and what do I do about this and what do I do about that, all that kind of stuff. You're welcome to join us. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I think you're going to want to tune in at about the 32 mark of this half hour, the first half hour. So 10:30, 10:32. Be there at 10:30. At 10:30, I have done I have created an example of a part from where it was built to when it got to your car. All the steps I've identified the dollars. So I've got everything down, and then I'm going to share with you a bunch of points, because I've identified this guy as I call around to different parts gurus that I respect and have known for 30, 40, sometimes 50 years. Who's the best guy to talk about from cradle to my car, wherever? And virtually everybody gave me one name. So I called him up and I said, "Will you talk to me about this?" He says, "If you don't give anybody my name." I said, "I won't. I promise." And he says, "Okay." He says, "Yeah, well, tell me what you want." I says, "What I want to do is I want to track a part from the drawing board, the bid process, then the manufacturing plant, and then where does it go from there? Where does it go from there? Where does it go from there? And when do I get it as the installer? And when does the customer get it? And they're the final, that's the final place for this part." In the process of part auto parts, we have what we call warehouse direct, WDs is the short name for them. And WDs is the warehouse that then distributes to the jobbers. And the jobbers are places like Parts Authority, Factory Motor Parts, O'Reilly's, NAPA, CarQuest, AutoZone. So those are jobbers. And jobbers then sell to you and to me at different prices. Obviously, because I'm spending sometimes, I don't know, $30,000 a month for parts, I'm going to guess. I'm probably a little bigger in their world than you are. So once it gets to the jobber, then it gets to the installer, me, and then it gets to you. So I'm going to tell you about an $8.50 part that's going to end up at $72 in your car. And I'm going to describe to you every place, everybody that touched it. That'll be at the bottom of the hour at 30. I'm still waiting for a couple of pieces of information to finish it out. But it basically starts off about a motor mount. It's a motor mount, and this was a random pick. It's an upper engine motor mount for a 2004 Ultima, and that's what we're talking about. Now, this guy, this secret agent guy, has tracked that part back to where it's built. And it's built in China. And so he knows, he shook hands with the guy that owns the factory. He's been there. He's been part of the testing process and the quality control of the part he's building. Then he knows about the transportation. He knows where it goes first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and you're eighth, something like that. And so everybody kind of talks about the pricing, and it's stepped on. It's called stepped on. So the jobber buys it, and then he sells it to me, but it's been stepped on. So he keeps a little bit of the money, and the price keeps going up. The very bottom guy is the guy that welcomes it to the United States of America. And there's a lot of information associated with this, but it's interesting to me because I worked at a gas station in Tempe in 1968, and Ken's Broadway Shell at Broadway and Priest. I learned how to pump gas. I learned how to bubble bounce tires. I learned how to patch tires, but Ken was adamant we wouldn't plug tires. And from that day forward, nothing in my shop has ever plugged a tire. Now, I'll take that back. Yes, we've plugged tires. We've been out off-road vehicles. We've been a long way away from help. and somebody will get a stick through their tire, and we will all together plug that thing until it looks like a porcupine so we can get that person home. But as far as plugging a car that's going to carry a family at highway speeds, the answer is my facilities never participate in that ever. We patch your tire from the inside. And so those are the kinds of things that we can talk about. A lot of fun stuff with respect to just helping you understand what's going on. I'm at the end. I'm going to tell you right now that the installer is at the end of that, except for the person whose car we're working on. So you are the final customer and the owner of that part. I make the most money on that part. But I also have to warranty that part, and I have to deal with that part in its afterlife. And they reward me that way, and they let me make the most money on this part because of that. And so that's kind of how it works. So at the end of the day, in about 20 minutes, I'm going to go through that. Actually, it's going to be like, Gil, I think it's 32 after the hour, 33, something like
about,
that.
34.
34. Gil says it's 34. Now, Gil flies the airplane. I get to sit in the back coach area, and every once in a while he'll let me come up to first class. But he's the one that yells in my ear when I miss my spots and miss my outs and all that other kind of stuff. But I've been with Gil since 2011. So I've been with him for 12 years. And of all the guys I've worked for, all the guys that have been in charge of me, he's done the very best job of all of them. Because we just grow together. That's why. And so I can always count if I look up at the clock and I'm supposed to be out at 20 seconds and I'm not going to hit it, I can be out at 22 and he'll cover my butt. He knows how to push the buttons and make up 2 seconds somewhere else. And it's pretty amazing because in radio, when they say that we want you out at 58 minutes and 50 seconds, your butt better be out at 58 minutes and 50 seconds. Unless, of course, Gil's running the board. He'll cover for you. And he never had, and the great thing about Gil is he never asked for favors. You know, he says, hey, I bailed you out on that out the other day at the bottom of the hour. How about a set of tires? No, Gil doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. Anyway, 602-508-0960. Do we have a caller?
Yes, sir. Rob is your first caller.
Rob, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, I hope you can.
Okay.
I've got an older Chevy pickup truck, and we decided to take a LS motor out of 2002 Tahoe and put it in there, so it's a little sportier, if you know what I mean.
Yes sir.
But I'm having a little overheat problem. It heats up, fills up my overflow, but it doesn't suck it back in.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you got any suggestions.
Okay. You have a thermostat in it?
It does have a thermostat in it.
Okay, like a 195, I'm thinking.
Somewhere in that frame, maybe at 180.
Okay. So, and when you say it's overheating, do you have a number or can you put the needle on the gauge for me?
It jumps up to maybe about 210, 220.
Okay. I'm going to argue with you about overheating because, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
We never knew this until when they put O2 sensors on cars. We never knew this. But we're going to create a lot of water in the oil, and everybody wanted to run a 160 thermostat or a 180 thermostat, and when we went to computerized cars, we went to a 195 thermostat, and we want those dogs to run at 200, 210, degrees, 220 degrees. That's what we want. And here's why we want that. Every time you shut that motor off, it's going to shed water. So the air inside the engine is going to condense. And as it, the warm motor and the warm air cools off, it creates water. So every time you shut it off, depending on a lot of different variety, you're going to have between 1 and 3 or 4 drops of water that end up in the oil. And everybody knows that water boils at 212. So we got to run that motor up there above 212 in order to boil the water out of the oil, and the PCV valve will vacuum that vapor and send it out the tailpipe. And that's why new engines with big thermostats and high temperatures. That's why they last for 2, 3, 4, and 500,000 miles. Where you and I probably, I'm guessing about your age, Rob, you and I probably came from, you put valve guide seals at 50,000 miles and you were rebuilding that dog at 100 because it puked oil so bad. So this is just different. So that, and then as far as not sucking it out of the coolant jug, as the engine cools off, the coolant level drops and we're supposed to suck coolant into the engine. Oftentimes there's an air leak somewhere and it sucks air rather than coolant. So you need to have a special cap, and I would buy a stamped cap.
2 minutes.
14, 15, 16-pound stamped cap. I want that thing to get hot where the upper radiator hose is stiff to the touch and you can't handshake the hose and count to three. Okay?
Okay.
And that means it's warm and good. And then I want you to walk away and come back in 5 or 10 minutes and I still want that upper hose to be stiff. That means we're holding pressure. We're holding pressure. And then that cap, you need to look up a cap that's for that vehicle that you pulled that motor out of, and I think it's going to be a 16-pound cap with a lever.
Okay.
And so the cap will let 17 pounds go into the overflow. Then as the coolant and the engine cools off and the coolant level drops in the motor, the valve opens up and it sucks wet coolant out. And make sure that in your coolant jug, the pipe inside, the hose inside, goes within a half an inch of the bottom of the jug.
Okay.
Because we got to suck coolant, but if somebody took the stem off the cap, it's got a nipple, we need a piece of vacuum line or fuel line 5 or 6 inches long that goes down into the coolant so we can suck it back out.
All right.
Now, you promised to call me back and tell me how I did?
It depends on what I'm doing next Saturday. You know how Saturdays are.
I'm with you. Or you can email me.
Saturday's the work day for you, but
yeah, no, it's a fun day for Mark. It's I work Monday through Friday, but it's a fun day for Mark. Mark at marksalem.com. You can send me an email. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. You can send me an email and tell me how I did. But I love these kinds of questions because we just have to kind of change technology in between our ears. And if you run that fuel-injected motor at 210, 220, it's going to love you and last forever, and you're not going to have any sludge problems in the engine, and you're not going to have a whole bunch of black marshmallowy stuff underneath the intake manifold when you pull it off. And so the inside of the engine will be nice and clean. But anyway, thank you very much, Rob. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we're going to give you back in a minute. Well, it's 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to go to the phones right after I tell you about Action Auto. Tom at Action Auto, he's up at Deer Valley on the I-17, the northwest corner. He's been my friend since 1983. I know he's honest. I know he knows how to fix cars. I know he knows how to hire technicians that really can fix cars. He's been around a very long time. He's well known for quality workmanship, and customer service is a word that good customer service is a word that's common when I get nice emails about Action Auto Repair. So that makes me happy. I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair. Jeff, you're up. How can I help you?
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being there. I discovered you a couple of months ago, and because I grew up, listen, I'm calling, oh, by the way, I'm calling from California, from Yorba Linda, and I grew up listening to Leon Kaplan out of L.A., and then I discovered you, and I've been listening to you every Saturday.
Well, thank you for that. You know, I knew Leon. I started radio in 1988, but he was before me. And there was times I would call him and say, I had somebody that, and he'd go, this is how you handle that, Mark. And so he was a mentor to me. I am very indebted to him.
He holds the record for being the longest on-air talent on KABC.
Oh.
35 years or something like that.
He was the king. He was the king of car talk shows.
I have an oil question and then a follow-up question. Okay. I had the oil changed on my ES350. I have a Lexus ES350. And I wanted to, I wanted to switch to full synthetic. And, so after he got done changing the oil, I looked at the bill and it said 5W30. And is that a full synthetic? I thought full synthetic started with a zero.
No, no. It's entirely possible that that 530 is a synthetic. And it's more likely than not that it is a synthetic. Now, what we're seeing today is all the oil values, and a 530 flows like a 5 weight when it's cold and flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. That's what that means. Mm-hmm. You're right, because the big dog in the town today, and it's going to be here for a very long time, is a 020. And I'm trying to get gray-haired guys to let me put 020 in their monster diesel trucks, and I'm having a tough time because they don't like the idea of a 020. But in reality, as we progress through the oil from the 30 weights, 40 weights, and, you know, 1030s, 1040s, 2050s, blah, 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 we've gone to where, you know what, we don't need peanut butter in the engine. We can cover them with a 020. And 020 mm-hmm. is an oil that does exceptional work. So 530 now. Here's more important. What kind of oil change interval did he tell you to use after putting synthetic in it?
Well, I think he set it for 5,000.
Okay. I'm going to disagree politely with that, and here's why. First of all, I've been trained by both Valvoline and Chevron, so I'm an oil expert in their eyes anyway. A conventional oil, which is what you and I were brought up on, that's 3,000 to 5,000 miles. A semi-synthetic that they won't tell you what the semi means, so you don't know if you're a 90-10 or a 50-50. The semi-synthetic picks up at 5 and goes to 7,500. The synthetic picks up at 7,500, and depending on your owner's manual, go to 25,000.
So even if it would it take me like 2 years or so to do that?
That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. The oil can do it. As long as the thermostat is the correct thermostat and as long as the rest of the cooling system is in good shape, then there is no problem. I have trucks in the 70s and the 80s that I'm putting 020 in. I put 020 in my truck, one-ton Dodge diesel that I drive around hauling horses. And so, and I also have a 020 in my big truck that hauls about 65,000 pounds. And I just hauled a big boom lift into the city to have it fixed. So, I don't want you to be scared of that.
Okay. Since you mentioned thermostat, that brings me to my follow-up question. I talked to you a month or so ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and it had to do with the thermostat on my Lex. It's a Lexus, uh-huh. but it's a Toyota motor, a 2GRFE V6. And I went to my dealership and asked them what the thermostat is set for. And in Fahrenheit, it comes out to about 178 degrees. And so I listened to you, I talked to you, and you told me to go get a pyrometer gun, run my engine till it got warm, and then gun the top hose.
Uh-huh.
And I did that. I got the gun, and I put it on the top hose, and it came out to about 178, right, you know, kind of right where the dealership says the thermostat ought to be. And I'm fully understand what you say about boiling off the water, but are the Toyota engineers missing something here? Or I've got coming up on 250,000 miles on this car, and it's trouble free.
Well,
do I need to worry about anything?
Well, I'm thinking that what year is the Lexus?
It's a 2012.
Okay. I'm thinking that I'd get on the internet and I'd go to like Rock Auto, punch in your Lexus and see if they show a variety of thermostats. And if so, I would have put a 195 in there. I mean, that's what I would have done. That would have put the needle between the half and the three quarter mark. And I'm perfectly comfortable with that. You already know my stance about let's get the water temperature oil temperature up over 220 so that we can boil the water out of it. So those
total
are all. Yeah, so, I mean, and I want you to gun it after you get off the freeway for a while. You know, you pull off to the side of the road and just gun the upper radiator hose where it comes out of the engine. And that's going to give you the true value of the stuff. But I got to run, but thank you very much for your call. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you very much for telling me I have a California listener. That's nice. Thank you very much. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
I had a 2021 Nissan Versa. I was reading the owner's manual, and it was talking about don't put the transmission in neutral, like when you're on the freeway or something. It said it could cause damage. It does have the CVT transmission. I was wondering if there's any what the rationale behind that is.
Well, the constant velocity transmission is just kind of a one speed, and
right.
and it's got you know. If you're doing 70 miles an hour, then the drive pulley inside, if I can create a visual for you, is at the very bottom of the shivs, and you throw it into neutral, and then it'll rise to the top of the shiv, and then you drop it back down into drive, and it's going to want to go to the bottom again. And I don't think that's a great idea for the transmission that you have that doesn't represent 1% of all the transmissions in the world.
Okay, that was what I was just curious about, the revs dropping down, so then when you put it back in, it's going to jerk it all the way up and whatnot. So.
It's going to go. Now, any other automatic transmission is going to slip right in and slip right out, but your CV's not that way. So I agree with that caution. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
All righty. And when we come back, and I know that I left Tom. Tom, you'll be my first caller, but before I'm going to take Tom, and then I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to read you something that's going to says it's basically this. We are getting lots of customers that tell us that they don't want any China parts used in their cars. I spend $35,000 a month or $1,750 a day buying parts for your car. I hear China, China, China all the time, and I want. And I also hear from, I only want GM parts in my Escalade. I only want to Ford parts in my Expedition, blah, 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 blah. So we're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. So about 32, 33, 34 minutes after the hour, in about 4 minutes or so, 5 minutes or so, we're going to talk about this. And I'm going to tell you, and I'll give you a little teaser right now. The fact of the matter is there's one company in the whole world that makes thermostats. One company. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange real quick. Phil's been around in the Phoenix area since 1968. He knows transmissions. He started when they were simple, two speeds and three speeds, all the way to the electronics where we use a computer to shift solenoids to make you go from first, second, third, fourth, fifth, overdrive, and lockup. So we have that kind of stuff. So if you're needing a transmission shop, the only one I can recommend is 40th Street in Washington called Automatic Transmission Exchange. The abbreviation often used is ATE. And we're going to go to Tom because Tom's been waiting, and I'm going to do him first, and then I'm going to read you my information about parts. Tom, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Love your show. Great service to the community. And I've got a 2010 F-150, and what I'm experiencing is if I'm driving, say, 45 miles an hour, and I'm just barely touching the gas, just enough to kind of maintain the speed, I'll feel like kind of a little hesitation or a little bump continually if I'm just like barely touching the gas. Now, if I accelerate, it accelerates and shifts and does everything just fine. But if I'm just kind of floating and maintaining speed at about 45, and I'm driving right now, I can feel it right now. It almost feels so slight, almost feels like a little bump in the road.
Okay, stop. Take it out of overdrive right now. Push your button at the end of your column.
Okay.
It should go away.
All right.
Here's why. 45 mile an hour is when we're locking up the converter or the torque converter or putting you into overdrive and you're in that and you're feathering throttle. The transmission or the computer doesn't know what you want. And so I'm quite sure that if you take it out of overdrive or you take it out of lockup, that it will go away. Another way to take it out of lockup is as you're throttling easy, just gently apply the brake. Not enough to slow the car down, but enough to turn the lights on. That cancels lockup. So a good tranny guy could drive that in a heartbeat. And I think as you drive down the road, you get it to happen. Your right foot's just doing whatever you're doing. And then you just take your left foot and you just barely touch the brake pedal. And then all of a sudden it'll stop. and nothing will happen and it will be normal, and then you let go of the brake pedal and count to 10 and it'll come back. If that's the case, stop driving at 45 miles an hour and stop feathering the damn pedal.
Okay, one last follow-up question, and that is, when I stop at a light or when I take off from a light, I feel a bump. And my independent mechanic guy, he's ASC certified, but an independent mechanic, runs a welding shop now, but he said that's fairly normal on the Fords. They all do that, and I had it on my 2001 as well.
Okay, well, I'd have to feel it, but if it's got a broken motor mount, it'll thump. And you said it's a 2000.
No, it's not a broken motor mount. He checked that.
Okay. Well, I want you to check it. I want you to open up the hood. You're sitting still. There's nothing in front of your car at all. And you're looking through the crack of the hood, and you put it in drive, hold your foot firmly on the brake, and then start revving the motor up. Whoop-a, 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 a little faster and harder, and watch the motor. It should not move much. Then you're going to take it out of drive and put it in reverse and do the same thing. The movement in reverse and drive should be the same. Neither one of them should, and if there's a broken motor mount, the motor will lift up and you'll go, holy mackerel, you'll pull the throttle away, and then boom, it'll fall back down. And then obviously he missed that. But somebody would have to drive it to see what the deal is, but I want you to test the motor mounts, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you much.
You betcha. Okay, who makes parts for your car? People say, I don't want any China parts. People say, I want GM parts for my Escalade. I want Ford parts for my Ford, blah, 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 blah. There is no such thing as a Ford factory that builds your parts. They buy it everywhere else. So China, China, China. That's all I hear is China. Okay, so I put together a team of guys. These guys probably have 100 or 200 years of experience buying parts, but there's one big dog. I can't use his name, but they all say, you got to talk to the big dog. So I call up the big dog and I say, I need some of your time. So here's the answer. Okay, you ready? From a global point of view, I'm going to say that again. From a global point of view, one gasket company makes 20% of the gaskets they sell, and then they buy the other 80% from other gasket makers. So the gasket can be in any one of about 20 different boxes, but it's the same gasket. One big company makes thermostats. One big company globally makes thermostats. One. So you can go buy all the thermostats and all the boxes you want, but it's the same damn thermostat. One oil filter maker makes 50% of all automotive oil filters. And I'm not going to give you the name of the company either. So you got a 50-50 chance. You think of one in two chance, no matter what box is in, I buy the cheapest one. There's five companies that make 90% of the spark plugs in the world. Five companies. So you can go buy them fancy, dancy ones that cost $20, $30, $40 a piece because they give you two sparks and all that other stuff. But it's coming from one of those five companies. There are six China companies that make 90% of the front-wheel drive and CV axles. 90%. I don't care where that axle's coming out of a box. It can be Chevy, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Saab. It can whatever. 90% of all front-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive constant velocity axles, CV axles, comes from six China companies. Eight China companies make 75% of the motor mounts. Eight China companies make 75% of all the motor mounts. 15 companies globally make 80% of the automotive batteries. I think they're probably pretty close to all the same. 20 manufacturers make 80% of the brake pads and shoes in the United States. And one guy came to the party and said, and it comes in 50 different boxes, and they had a big argument about that, but I settled on 50. They all agreed on 50, but some of them said it was even more than that. 20 manufacturers make 80% of the brake pads and shoes of all the United States, and they're in 50 or 60 box, 50 plus boxes. And then hub bearings. So real quick, I'm going to do this after the break, so I have to take a break right now, but meet me and we're going to do the dollars. How much money goes where between the cost of the part and on your car? And I'll answer that right after this. Okay, I'm not going to make you wait any longer. I'm going to tell you a story that's true, and I verified it. And you're going to just, you're not going to believe it, but I don't care. Remember that upper engine mount? There's an upper engine mount for a 2004 Ultima. And they took this upper engine mount to China. And the guy says, I'll make it for $8.50 each. I'll cut the two pieces of metal on either side, and I'll put the appropriate holes in them to mount. I'll take the pillow, the big rubber pillow in the middle, and I'll vulcanize it to the two pieces. I'll do all that myself, and I'll sell it to you for $8.50. I talked to a group of guys that said his cost was $8.25, but he sold millions of motor mounts, and he makes 25 cents a piece. So, folks, listen to me carefully. 25 cents of that axle stayed in China. 25 cents of an $8.50 axle stayed in China. Now, we got to get that thing into the West Coast, so we got a boat that's going to haul that axle to the West Coast. Let's pretend the boat holds a jillion, million, trillion axles. They're going to cost about $1 a piece or a penny a piece. Take your pick. I don't care. Then when it gets there, we're going to put it on a truck, and it's going to have to go to a what we call a warehouse, a WD, and a distribution point. So we got a trucking charge for the axle. And that stays in the United States. The shipping charge stays in the United States. But the 25-cent axle charge stays in Texas or in China. So it gets here, and it gets to a warehouse, and then it goes to a jobber, and then it goes to an installer, me, and then it goes to you. That's how it works. Everybody's stepping on that thing. Who do you think makes the most money on that axle? Is it the warehouse? Is it the jobber? Like, the jobber is O'Reilly's and AutoZone and Napa and CarQuest, that kind of stuff. Those guys are jobbers. Or is it the installer, me? Who makes the most money? The answer is I do. I make the most money. You remember that $8.50 axle in China? Okay. By the time it gets to me, it's going to cost me $45 to $50. So between $8.50 and $45 to $50, all of that money stays in the United States. I'm going to sell it to you for $73. Okay? That's how it works. I don't care. You can stand toe-to-toe with me anytime you want, but I have a team of guys that have hundreds of years of experience, and this has taken me a month to put this together. A month. So I'm going to tell you again, that China guy made 25 cents on the axle, and he sold it to somebody for $8.50. Then we had to transport it here on a boat. Then it had to be taken and put on a truck. And then it had to go to a what we call a warehouse. And from the warehouse, it goes to the jobber. That's the parts store that sells it. Then it goes to Mark Salem. And then it goes to your car. So I'm going to tell you one more time. You're going to pay $73 for it. And it's going to cost me between $45 and $50, depending on where I buy it. So if $8.50 of that axle stayed in China, then the rest of the $8 less 73 or 73 less $8 is in the United States. It's in the United States. And they all agree unequivocally that that's the case almost in every part made in China. It's just that our economy is different. We all agree it's not a place we want to move. We all agree that we don't approve of the government. We all approve of how they treat people is not very good. We all agree with that. But it's just a different economy. And it's a different kind of place. We give them plans, and they make the part based on our plans, and then we test the part. So when you tell me that you don't want any Chinese parts in your car, I want you to know my head starts swimming really, really bad. Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Bob, how can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. A while back, my best friend, Pat, his daughter just gave me one of his vehicles, and we were going through his garage. Oh, he was kind of a hoarder.
Okay.
I've ended up with a dozen or so jugs of unopened oil and what's the stuff you put in the radiator?
Oh, coolant.
Antifreeze, okay.
Yeah.
Like I say, a bunch of them. Does that stuff get old? Should I keep it? if I don't want to keep it, what do I do? Give me a suggestion.
Well, you can take it to an auto repair shop. We all know how we're going to recycle coolant, so we all deal with that on a regular basis. And you can take it to an auto parts store, and most of them will take a coolant as a recycle as long as you bought something from them. So go buy 5 quarts of oil and an oil filter and take your coolant in and see if they'll take it. When you take the cap off the antifreeze, is the aluminum cover broken? Or is it still intact?
No, it's not. That was my point. How long does that stuff keep?
It's forever. It lasts forever.
It's never been open.
It's forever. Is it a 50-50? Does it tell you to mix 1 gallon of that with 1 gallon?
A couple of them are 50-50. Yeah, a couple of them are 50-50. A couple of them are, zero. In other words, they're full,
right.
Full antifreeze. No,
yeah.
50.
Okay.
And the oil is different weights of stuff, so.
The oil's going to be fine, and the coolant's going to be fine. You can decide what you want to do. The coolant is, you don't even know because you haven't opened it and you haven't cracked the seal, but it could be green, it could be orange, it could be pink, it could be red, it could be a bunch of different colors, but whatever's on the outside of it tells you what it is.
Yeah, they're all brand name stuff.
Okay.
Well, okay.
All right.
I'll figure out that if it's good, I'll keep it. If not, maybe I'll just donate it to one of the shops somewhere.
Yeah,
okay.
You can do
that.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Thank you. Coolant and oil. Okay, Craig, you're up next. How can I help you? And thank you for holding.
Yes, Mark. I got a 2005 Chevy Tahoe, 4.8-liter Vortex. Got 235,000 miles on it. I'm having trouble starting it. Hit the key, and it starts up, and then it shuts off. You do this probably 3-4 times, and then it'll stay running.
Okay.
Sometimes it won't even start. It won't catch. It won't start.
Okay.
Stay running.
This is what I want you to do. I want you to turn the key on, but don't go to the start position. Count to 3 or 4. Turn it off.
Okay.
Count to 3 or 4.
Okay.
Turn it on. I want you to cycle the key on 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
Every time you turn the key on it, we fire up the fuel pump. Then if you say, after cycling the key on and off 4 times, the 5th time, it starts right up and runs. Well, we've got a problem with fuel pressure, and I have had you prime that motor by turning the key to the on position, counting to 3 or 4 until it stops buzzing, and turn it off. So I found out that the system wasn't pressurized, and if we pressurize it by cycling the key on and off 3 or 4 or 5 times, then it starts and runs. So now we have to find out where it's leaking. Do we have an injector leaking, or is the fuel pressure regulator leaking? So we have to find out where it's leaking. And more than likely it's in the tank, and more than likely it's in the pump.
Does it have to be, do you have to do that 4 times? Because, I mean, I've done that at least 3 times, and it doesn't start. But I don't think I've tried it the 4th time.
Well, you can do it as many times as you want. The real question is we're priming the fuel system when we turn the key to the on position. We're not cranking it over. We're priming the fuel system.
Yes, and I've been doing that just to try to get it to catch.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you put a pressure gauge, if you went and rented a pressure gauge at an auto parts store and screwed it onto the fuel rail, you'd be able to see all this happening. You screw it on, and it's got 6 pounds of pressure on it. You turn it on, and it pumps to 8, and you turn it on, and it goes to 12, and so forth. And then all of a sudden you'll say, hey, Mark, it starts when it's at 16, or it starts at 20. And it runs fine.
Okay.
We still got to fix the problem on when you shut it off at night. It should have the same problem, the pressure in the fuel system, as the next morning.
It should stay the same.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So there's a check valve in the fuel pump, and there's a fuel pressure regulator. And both of those can leak and cause you a problem that you have.
Check valve in the what?
There's a check valve in the pump. More than likely, there's a check valve in the pump. And then you have a fuel pressure regulator somewhere in the fuel system that's supposed to maintain pressure when you turn the key off. Now, you could have a bad fuel injector, too. And if you want to figure that out, then pull all the spark plugs. And usually the bad fuel injector will be a little darker in color than the rest of them.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck to you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to have another hour of car talk, but you're welcome to join in now. There's 5 lines available. And Gil's the operator and the general and the pilot of my plane. of the plane that is owned by the radio station. I get to sit in the first class seats. I don't ever yell at Gil because he has the steering wheel in his hands, and I don't want him to shove it forward and have the plane nosedive into the next mountain. So he's the one I have to please. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960 if you want to talk about cars, if you have a car question or something like that. I had the opportunity to speak to a whole bunch of RV people yesterday that were down in Casa Grande, and there was 140-some-odd coaches there of one particular brand. And the people that took the stage before me were people that represented the coach maker. And I felt sorry for those guys because I think that they came unprepared for some of the frustrations of the people that owned the coach. I was really, really impressed, though, that they maintained their cool, and so did the audience. Nobody really got stupid. But one of the things that I was teaching was real simple. Number one, at 200 degrees, if you temperature check your tire with one of those guns, as you should, and you gun the tire where the tread meets the sidewall, that's called the crown. So instead of checking it with an air gauge, check it with the temperature gun. Just gun the tire, put your gun about 3 or 4 inches from the edge of the tire, has a little red dot, whoop, and take the temperature of your tire. The glue comes apart at 200. You don't ever want to be close to 200. What you're looking for is all of them to be the same. So I said to the people with RVs, you got 10 tires. What's the wife doing when you're out there washing the windshield and filling it up? She needs to do what my wife's doing. You have to get your fingernails dirty. You don't have to check the air. Just walk around and gun all 10 tires, and we're just looking for the same. They all should be 110 to 120 Fahrenheit. Perfect. One of them is 140 or 150, or one of them is 170 or 180. That tire's got a problem. It's probably underinflated, probably got a nail in it, probably lost some air, and it's getting really hot. And when it gets close to 200, it can happen at 190, 195, but it's going to happen at 200. That tire's coming apart, whether it has air in it or not. So that 200 Fahrenheit number is a very important for people with motorhomes. But if you have a car or a truck, and say you haul horses like I do, when we stop for fuel, my wife Renee gets out with her temperature gun, and she guns all the tires on the dually. The truck, there's 6 tires there, and then there's, depending on which trailer we've got, there's 4 to 8 tires on the trailer. And it's probably full of cows or horses or something like that. So she guns all the tires, and she gets back in the car. Her fingernails didn't get dirty. She didn't get dirty. And I said, how'd they do? She says, they're all well within reason. I said, what does that mean? And she says, they're all within 10 degrees of one another. She says, as a matter of fact, we're going from Phoenix to Tucson. The sun's on the east side of the truck, and the tire's on the right side of the truck that face the sun, because when it's in the afternoon, she says, they're a little bit hotter on the left side. And I thought, wow. She picked up on that. The sunny side of the truck on the right side. So the right side truck tires and the right side horse trailer tires were running a little hotter than the left side, and it had to do with the sun. And as soon as we turned east in Tucson and headed towards Wilcox, I stopped and gunned the tires. They were all the same. That's because the sun had gone down, too. But anyway, 602-508-0960. You've got 5 lines open. Gil's not snoring yet. He's the one that's going to handle your call, and you're welcome to join. 602-508-0960. If you're listening to us on iHeartRadio, I'll give you 888-960-9696. Toll free outside Phoenix. 888-960-9696. 9696. And we have been getting quite a few calls that later identify them to Gil or to me as an iHeartRadio fan, and you're welcome to call in because the show is live. The only difference is they put me on a little bit of a delay in case the caller or Mark Salem says a bad word, then Gil pushes a button and it magically deletes the bad word. So when I call Gil, he can just push a button and make all that go away. He doesn't usually do that because I don't call him names. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960. That's the Phoenix number, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. When we come back, we're going to do another hour of Car Talk, and we can probably do 10, 15 calls in that hour, and you're welcome to join us. The lines right now have two. We've got three open, but you've got a chance at those, and that's all you have to do, 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. This is 960 The Patriot in Phoenix, and we'll be back with the Car Show right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And you know what? We're not going to waste any time. We're not going to talk about anything. We're just going to go straight to the phone. And I'll tell you what my list says. Christy, you're first. And then I have Lee number one, Greg, Dan, and Lee number two. So, Christy, you're first. I'm all ears. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2006 VW Beetle convertible. And the driver's side window wouldn't roll up. So I took it in, had it fixed, and had had issues with the battery. And they diagnosed it that the alternator needed to be replaced. But the replacement of an alternator is about $900 to $1,000. So I opted not to do that. So I just keep it on a trickle charger at home. But is that really how much an alternator would cost?
I'm floored by that price. I mean, I can't explain it, and it's not fair to you if you try to ask me to explain it, because that I'm floored. I'll tell you what I'll do. My email is mark@marksalem.com. You send me an email with the year, make, and model, and the VIN number.
Okay.
The VIN number. Now, do you, you wouldn't have a digital voltometer, would you?
A digital, say that again?
A voltometer. Do you have a voltmeter by chance?
You know what? I don't think I do.
Okay. Well, this is what, if you know anybody that might have a voltmeter, knows how to use it, okay? A voltmeter has two leads, mm-hmm. a black one and a white one, a black one and a red
okay.
one. And I'm looking at 12 volts, that range, and so I would take the, I would hit your battery and say, oh, you got 12 volts. And I'd keep the leads there, and I'd say, start the car up and rev it up. So you're going to start it up, and you're going to bring the idle up to like 1,200 RPM, and I'm going to look at the meter, and it's going to say 13 volts. And I'm going to go, well, wait just a minute on this diagnosis about a bad alternator. I just got a volt over beginning volt. Oh, wait just a minute. It went to 13.8. Woo, baby, this bad alternator isn't bad right now. So I think maybe, too, you just get a second opinion from someone, because you didn't have an alternator problem when you went in there, but they found it, yes?
I had a, like, a, the battery did have a short life, but I can tell you since I've brought it home, it's even shorter.
Okay, so in the case of shorter, if you park it in the garage, then there's a short period of time where you go out and it won't start. And when it won't start, does it click? Does it try to crank? Or does it just click? Or is it the machine gun, and that's it?
It clicks.
Okay, and it won't start. It won't crank over, I should say. It won't crank over.
No.
Okay. Okay, well, those are symptoms of a bad battery. What you're describing is a symptom of a shorted battery. I don't know how that would be related to the, you know, the driver's problem, your driver's glass, but one way or another, most of us charge somewhere between $15 and $45 for a complete electrical systems check. Check the belt, check the alternator, check the regulator, check shorts and draws, check grounds and all that other kind of stuff. It's kind of a full-blown thing. But you can also go to an auto parts store. I would probably try O'Reilly's or AutoZone and take it there and have them check it. And if you want, if it's a bad battery, they'll put one in, and they won't do an alternator. But I want to tell you, I am really suspect of the 900. I would venture a guess that that's going to be a 200 to 300. I'm going to say as low as 125 and as much as 300 for the alternator. I'm just going to guess, but I got lots of years of guessing.
Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful. It's my 16-year-old daughter's car, but we're going to get her a different one over the summer. But I don't want to sell this to someone where the battery dies. You know what I mean? That's not right.
No, it's going to sell a whole lot better with a fresh battery in it where it doesn't have any issues. Because if you try to sell it broken, they're not going to believe that you're telling them the truth. And somebody's going to say, oh, that thing has a $1,500 alternator. Somebody's going to say, oh, that has a wiring problem where you have to replace the whole section of engine wire harness, and it's about $6,000. That's the kind of crap you're going to run into. So let's just get it fixed now, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, Christy. Lee, number one, how can I help you?
Mark, thank you for taking my call. I've got two problems. One is a past problem that I got solved, but I've got a 2014 Ram dually with a diesel in it. And at 62,000 miles, my turbo actuator went out.
Okay.
Is that pretty common?
Yeah, it happens to Fords and Chevys and Dodges. It happens to a lot of them. We're dealing in the exhaust system of your diesel, and it ain't the cleanest place in the world. And so, yes, we have a diesel performance division in my shop. That's part of what we do. We do old cars, we do vintage cars and mom and dad's cars, and we do diesels. And we do our fair share of getting the turbo to be applied.
and
so the actuator is part of that. Let me ask you a question. How many miles are on that 6.2?
Right now I got 69.
Okay.
1,000.
69,000. Okay. All right.
It happened at about 64,000.
Okay.
And I got it fixed at the dealer.
All righty. Well, I got a 12.67, 1 ton, and I got 140,000 miles, and I haven't done anything to the turbo at all. I'm of the opinion that most turbo problems are from feather-footed drivers, and I think maybe you might be a little bit more aggressive with the driving habits you're using, not to violate the law, but it's okay when you're climbing a hill to just go ahead and put it to the floor for just a little while.
My wife is standing here looking at me, and she's shaking her head.
She's saying no.
I'm not a feather-footed driver.
Okay. You're my kind of guy. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's a polite way to go into that area without getting in trouble.
I understand.
Well, you already.
Go ahead. Nope. I've got another issue with my cameras.
Okay.
I got a backup camera, but it's in the mirror, and I got a bed camera which is on the big screen. Is there any way to flip flop those?
I want you to call Sounds Good to Me. Sounds Good to Me or Cartoons, and I think Cartoons is either with a K or a C. Tunes is TOONS. Those are the two stereo shops that I think can answer your question the very best. Those are the ones we depend on, and those are the ones that we respect. And I think they're both going to have a video input, and so the question really is can we switch them? And they'll be able to answer that.
Yeah, I was in a panic because I didn't want to have to really take it back to the dealer to do it. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm going to tell you that it's my opinion it's going to go to one of those stores anyway. You can take it to the dealer, but it's going to end up over there. So all I'm saying is just try it. You got nothing to lose.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Good luck to you. Greg, you're up next. Greg?
It's Craig.
Craig, I'm sorry. Craig? I think we lost Craig.
This is Bob.
Oh.
Bob here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Bob, I'm sorry. That was my fault. But, Bob, go ahead. What can we do for you?
Yes, sir. I got a carburetor question. You still knowledgeable on those?
I think most people would agree that I'm on a 1 to 10 scale. I'm a 9.5.
Very good. Well, I've taken mine off my 73 Volvo. I have a Weber carburetor on it. It's a 38-38. DGES electric choke. I've taken it apart, cleaned it. I'm going through jets, and I've done this probably three times now. I live in Payson, so I'm at 5,000 foot elevation. Okay.
Okay.
Car starts beautiful, idles beautiful, runs beautiful. When it gets warm, after it's warmed up, I can accelerate slowly, go through the gears up to 4,000 or 5,000 RPM. Beautiful. Let's say I'm cruising in second gear or third gear at 2,000 to 3,000 RPM, and then I want to stomp on it, and it hesitates for about a second and a half, and then it blows right through that point and goes right up the red line without any issues. Any ideas for me?
Well, obviously, you're losing fuel when you go from one throttle position and you violently go to the other. The accelerator pump, it's not going to usually be involved in your carburetor activity. The first 10% throttle, the accelerator pump's involved. So,
right.
Does that Weber have a power valve in it?
It does have power valve. I replaced it.
Okay. The only thing I would, as far as diagnosis is concerned, get yourself a small propane tank, put about 8 feet of rubber hose on it, stick it in the air cleaner, and go drive it with the valve on the propane tank shut. Then open up the valve on the propane tank and then stuff it to the floor and see what happens. And if it fixes it, then we're working on a problem where we're not getting enough fuel on when you stab it to the floor. Then we're going to
have to... Where do I hook up the propane tank to? The fuel inlet?
Yeah. No. In the air inlet.
In the air inlet.
Yeah, we're gonna take this hose from the propane tank that's 5 feet long, and we're going to stick it in the mouth of the carburetor.
Okay.
But you're not going to have propane until you open up the valve. And
that
all I'm doing
like
is I'm enriching the condition. I'm adding fuel, safe fuel, to the engine, and I'm looking for a big difference. I'm looking for Bob to say, Mark, when I open up the valve about a half a turn and I stuff it to the floor, it goes. If I shut the valve off and I stuff it to the floor, it doesn't go. It's got a hesitation. That's what I'm looking for. It's a diagnostic process.
That would mean the carburetor wouldn't be getting enough fuel under acceleration, what you're saying.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Any warnings on using the propane, the little bottle like you do for your camp stove?
Well, exactly. And let me tell you one other thing. Do you have a fire extinguisher?
I do.
Okay.
Take it with
All right. Now, pay attention to me now, okay? You're going to have the hood up on your car, and you've got the air cleaner off of the carburetor, and the motor's running. And you have a glove on your left hand. You're going to take your right hand, and you're going to throttle it up off idle. Run. And about the third of the way, when the motor's kind of screaming, you're going to stuff the throttle to the floor, and at the same time, you're going to put your hand over the top of the carburetor.
And
it's going to die. I want you to do that about 4 or 5 times. And what I'm having you do is I'm having you use engine vacuum to suck all the small ports inside that carburetor, because I'm going to shut the air off when you put your gloved hand over that one barrel. And when you do that, then we're going to really use the engine to suck hard on all the trash inside that carburetor. I can tell you that in the old days, that worked 50% of the time on a carburetor with a lean throttle-up position problem that you have right now.
Okay.
Do you understand?
So you're thinking there's still dirt in the system somewhere.
Somewhere.
Contaminated.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try that, and I will use a glove. And do I hold it at full throttle or just rev it up, then put it over?
No, you're going to rev it. Then you're going to stuff it, and then you're going to go boom with your hand. You're going to let it gain a little bit of RPM, you know, but you're just going to kind of have to time it. From the time you hit the throttle to the floor, 1001, 1002, you better have your glove over the top of that carburetor. And have a fire extinguisher close by in case the glove catches fire.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much, sir. You have a great day.
All righty, you bet. Thanks. All righty, Dan and Lee, stay right there. We'll be right back. So welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to go back to the callers just like we said we were. We're going to talk real quick with Gil, the board op, and the engineer and the producer of the show. Gil, what happened to Greg, and how did we get from Greg to Bob? Now, wait a minute. Gil, is it my fault?
It was Craig.
Okay.
And then his call dropped, and he called back. He said it was Craig, and then he ended up being Bob. Not sure how that worked, but yeah, that's what happened.
I'm just teasing you. You know that I'm just teasing you. The two of us have these kinds of calamities happen a lot, and no one really takes offense, and no one's complained because we called him Craig when his name was Bob. So it's no big deal.
That's true.
Anyway, Dan, you're up first. How can I help you, buddy?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a 68 Camaro. I yanked the original factory AC out of it about 10 years ago, and I've had the toughest time finding someone in the East Valley that is knowledgeable on that to be able to toss everything back in. It had a thrown bearing in the compressor and pulled it out, and the factory manual is not very descriptive. It's a numbers matching car, so I'd like to get it as original as possible. So I was trying to pick your brain on someone in the East Valley, Mesa area, preferably.
Okay, now, what's the matter with it? Is the compressor bad?
The compressor was bad. I had it factory refurbished through a local place in California before we moved out here. And so I have all the components. It just needs to be put back correctly.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to like my answer. But nobody's going to want a part of that. Nobody's going to want a part of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, so I put the thing back together, and it doesn't work.
Yep.
And the first thing I have to do is defend myself against you and the guy that rebuilt it. And so we got three people involved, and everybody's going to point at everybody else, and you're not going to get anywhere, and it's not going to work. Now, you've got an A6 compressor in the car. It's a long tube. Okay.
The big one, yep.
Okay. I don't know. You might call Allie's Refrigeration over in Mesa. You might call Allie's. I think it's A-L-L-I-E-S. That old dog knows more about air conditioning systems, especially Chevrolets, than anybody I know. You might talk him into putting that back together and putting it on. But you don't complicate it. I want you to put it and rebuild it, and I want you to install it, and I want you to charge it, and I want you to give it back to me with cold air. Don't put somebody else in that chain. You'll be sorry.
Yeah.
So whoever rebuilds it puts it back on. Now, the other guy you might call, and Tom is missing a few brain cells. He's a friend of mine. He's hit his head so many times, and he's Blackwell Automotive, and he does vintage cars, and he might take that on. But we do vintage cars, but that's not anything I'm sorry, it's no offense to you. That's just that is a disaster waiting to happen. The only other thing you could
do is
hang on to the old compressor and the kit you got and put another A6 on there and enjoy that. And if you're gonna sell the car, you say, here's the original compressor and here's a kit. You could do something that.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty.
All right. Great. Thanks for your help. Blackwell Automotive, that's in East Valley?
Yeah. He's at 40th Street and Greenway, so he's kind of in the northeast Scottsdale area. Allie's Refrigeration is on Country Club near Broadway or Southern, somewhere around in there.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks for the call.
You betcha. Thank you. Allie's Refrigeration and Blackwell, T-O-T, and that means turned over to Blackwell. All righty, let's go to Lee. Lee, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Mark. They've got a 69 Firebird 400, and I think it's got a miss to it at idle. It's got an aggressive cam in it, and so at idle, it's got the shake to it, lob. And I thought, well, is it really the cam doing it, or is it a miss? So I've pulled each spark plug wire independently, and number six cylinder doesn't seem to be doing anything. I don't feel any change in it, where all the other ones, of course, you pull a plug and it starts, shaking a little bit more. So I swapped the spark plugs, four to six, no difference. I changed the wires from four to six. Both at the distributor, of course, and down below, and no difference. So is it possible with an aggressive cam you're going to have one cylinder that won't have any effect?
Well, to answer your question is the cam's not going to be your problem. It's just not. So once you bring it up off of idle, it runs smoothly, yes, and it accelerates smoothly, yes, and it goes fast, yes.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got a problem with that cylinder. Is it an intake gasket leak where it's running lean? Are we getting fuel to it? Are you running so lean on the carburetor that you're starving that cylinder? Which cylinder is it, by the way?
Number 6, and I was able to adjust the idle airs on both sides of the carburetor and had a tachometer on it, and it did adjust, you know, you go in and out and adjust it to the highest RPM on each side.
Okay.
And as far as the intake, that's what I maybe think, an intake gasket, and I sprayed carb cleaner right on top of the intake where it meets the head to no difference, and then had to get underneath the intake manifold. It's an Edelbrock intake. But I put a piece of hose going into where I thought was probably up to the number 6 intake.
Okay.
And then sprayed carb cleaner in there.
I understand. Stop. You haven't found it. I understand what you're doing, which is what all of us would do. I can't fix your car on the radio because at the end of the day, everything I guess, you're going to say you've already done. And everything I say to do, you're already going to say that you've come to that conclusion. That's the tough part about one of these things. You just described where you get the highest RPM with the air-fuel mixture screws, and you adjusted them to the highest RPM. I don't agree with that at all. The air-fuel mixture screws at idle, you're supposed to trim those in until you get a 50 RPM drop and then back out a half a turn. So if you back them out a whole ways, you're going to get a continuing idle rise, because those control fuel to the idle circuit. So if you back those trim screws out, you're just drowning the motor in fuel. That's not necessary. So I think what you really should do is get a hold of Blackwell. He does vintage car. What part of town do you live in?
Out by Queen Creek.
Oh, I don't have anybody out there at all. You can call Thompson's in Mesa and see if Brian wants to tackle this. He's certainly capable. Some guys just don't like the vintage car stuff. Maybe call your local auto parts store and ask them who does nice vintage car work. But did this always have this lope problem? Did it always have this problem? Or is it something that happened? It was before okay, then it happened, and now you've been working on it. Is that the 1, 2, 3 of this problem?
Pretty much. It's always had a lope to it because of the cam. And it just sounded a little bit different to me, especially when the engine is
okay. Cold. All right. I know, but we've been through here before. Just a yes or no is what I was looking for. Let me ask you a question. If you put a gloved hand over the carburetor and squeeze off about 50% of the air, I want you to see if that makes a difference or not. So let's shut off about 50% of the air to the motor and see if the idle changes, because you say that you've got the ability to listen and hear different changes. I believe you. I do have that ability, but I'm real interested in if you put your gloved hand over the mouth of the carburetor and you slowly close the mouth of the carburetor, is there a point where all of a sudden she sweetens up?
1 minute.
So it goes from loping, 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 that's kind of what I'm interested in. I want to know if by reducing the air and adding more fuel, if we're going to overcome this problem. I don't know what they're going to charge you. I don't know what a shop's going to charge you. I know ours would be somewhere in the vicinity of $100 to $200. Depends on where it's at. You don't know where it's at, and it could very well be one of these things where you go to go in and work on this, and it costs $150 to find it and $6 to fix it. But don't count on that. But why don't you call Blackwell up at the 40th Street and Greenway and see if he wants to tackle this, because he would be a good guy to do that. And I'll also call Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa on Main Street and ask Brian if he wants to do that. He is certainly capable of doing that. And Kevin, you stay right there, because when we come back, we're going to take you first. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, and we're going to go straight to Kevin because he's been waiting a long time. And, Kevin, I'm all ears. How can I help you today?
Well, first off, I want to thank you and your crew for everything that you do for us out here. Can you hear me okay? I'm on speaker.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you.
Okay. My wife writes a lot faster than I do, so she's listening here. we have a motorhome, and we want to know where we can take it. We live in Apache Junction, and we want to know where we can take it to have a lube, oil, tune-up, tires, you know, things like that. Do you have any places you suggest?
I would try Thompson's at Stapley and Main Street. Let me tell you a little bit about Brian and Thelma. Brian's family and Thelma's family started in the gas station business in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They were the two predominant Shell and Mobil and Union 76 dealers in the Mesa community that dates back that far, 50 years ago. The two of them were born and raised with dinner smelling like gas. And I'm from that era, and I know their parents. So Brian and Thelma both came from that area, and I'm quite sure. Tell me, how long is it?
How long what?
The coach, how long is it?
Oh, it's a Southwind 35A. Okay. What would that mean, 35 feet?
Yeah, 35 feet. And I was wondering if it's a 45-footer or a 35-footer. So you're going to call Thompson's Auto Repair, and I think Thelma's going to answer the phone. And said, Mark Salem said you might change the oil in my motorhome. I have a 35-foot south wind with probably a Chevy chassis, yes?
Yes, I don't. Someone told me it was would be an 8-something.
An 8?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm the thinking, motor. The motor, is it a 454? Or usually they put the Chevy.
That I don't know. Okay. I can't tell you. We just got it, and okay. We're trying to get ready for a trip.
Okay. Then this is, I would suggest you do this. I was recommended by Mark Salem. I don't make any money on this, so I'm not doing that for that. I just bought this motorhome, and I would like for you to change the oil. And in the oil change, I understand that you check all the belts and the hoses and the fluids and the tires and the brakes and stuff, and I appreciate that. But I also, maybe if you have somebody there that can just kind of walk me through, and can I watch him light the refrigerator? Can I watch him light this? Can we fire up the generator? And I promise to pay your hourly rate while I'm there. I think that would be a home run if that's what you want. But if you just want an oil change, then just tell him, I just want an oil change, and I want you. Because see, an oil change is change the oil in the filter, check the belts, the hoses, the fluids, and the tires. That's what that's what it's all about. So Thompson's is just down the street from you. It's the only one I can recommend in Mesa, but they've never let me down.
Yeah, and I'm looking to do not only the lube and oil. I want to do a tune-up and tires.
Okay. Too. Now, on the tires, talk to Brian and Thelma. I don't know if they do tires, but if I were you, I'd go to Discount Tire.
They don't touch them, the size tires that they are, those.
Seriously?
Whatever it is. Yeah, they don't touch them.
There's 16-inch tires on your Southwind, aren't they?
No, they're the big ones.
Are they 19.5s?
I don't know. It said
that's what they told us. They told us they wouldn't touch them.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're the big tires, like on the trucks.
Okay, well, and I understand. I'm pretty sure they're not 22.5s. I'm pretty sure they're 19.5s. But nevertheless, it doesn't make any difference. If you're going to have to come into town to do tires, have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, please.
480-598-1234. Ask for Alan. And be standing next to the motorhome when you talk to Alan. That's my son. Okay. And you're going to say, your dad said you don't know anything about tires, but I'm standing next to my motorhome, and I want to read you the side that's red that's on the side of the tire, and I would like you to bid 6 tires installed and tell me what brand.
No, I don't want to change tires. I just want to air them up, make sure they're aired.
Anybody can do that. But you said the Discount said they wouldn't air your tires up?
Yeah, they don't touch those big tires.
Okay.
I've been to 4 different tire shops in the area here, and they don't touch them.
I'm just surprised beyond belief. I'm surprised beyond belief. And when you get done at Brian's for your oil change or whatever, then have Brian call me and tell me what size tire that this monster's got on it. You're telling me something. I've been in motorhome since 1978, and you're telling me something that I've never heard before. And so I believe you. I just
it's
there's going to be
right on the trail.
I understand that. It's just I don't know. I pulled over in a church parking lot here, not to pray that you give me an answer, but to catch your show before you discontinue.
Okay. Well,
and
Alan,
both size tires.
Okay. Alan is capable of putting on any tire you got on that motorhome. He can bid a variety of tires, but he's probably going to bid a Toyo because that's what Dad has on my motorhome. And that's what all the family has on their cars, and that's what all of our rental cars have on their cars. So I'm just telling you that we have the tire that we sell, and it's made in Atlanta, Georgia, by the way. So
okay,
Alan can help you with the tires. Stop. I got to go. Alan can help you with any questions you have on the tires, but I'm sure Brian can air them up. I'm sure Brian at Thompson's can do your oil change, and airing up the tires is part of the oil change. But I got to run. Good luck to you. If you ever want to continue the conversation, Mark at MarkSalem.com. I understand what you've been told. I'm just struggling with that. I'm not calling you a liar or anything like that. I'm just speechless of what you're saying to me that you've been told. I can't explain it, and I'm speechless. But we'll be back in a minute. Oh boy. Okay, I called the number one guy at Discount Tire, and I said, I'm told the couple with a motorhome, a new motorhome to them, called the local discount, and they wanted somebody to air up their tires, and they were told no. And he didn't use bad words, but he did call me a liar. and he said to tell everybody, their number one issue is safety for people that are customers of them, and the only reason that they wouldn't air up the tires is if the tires were more than 10 years old, but size has nothing to do with it, and that they are the most experienced, their staff is the most experienced people, and has access to all kinds of data. So he doesn't understand. And my interpretation of the conversation was that they called the discount and said, will you check the tires? And discount said no. And he says, that's what we do. We help take care of our customers' tires, whether they bought them from us or not. He says, a third of our day in man hours is airing up people's tires for them. But they do look at the date code to determine if the date code says the tires is 10 years or older. Because I won't touch a 10-year-old tire because the liability is huge. So if you come into my shop and your tire's 10 years old, I'm not airing it, I'm not rotating it, I'm not balancing it. I'm telling you, you got a tire that needs to come off there, and the odds of that tire hurting your family are getting greater by the minute, by the hour, by the day. And we're getting sued like crazy over stuff like that. So I just needed to clear that up, and I just happened to have the number one guy's phone number, and so I thought I'd call him, and we'd do that, and hopefully it'll work. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. But let me tell you, and that's a phone number because the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a couple of shops that in the area that do good work, and they'll air your tires for you. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. Been around since 1982. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I've known Chuck since 1968. He's the owner of Auto Dynamics. They do good work. They know right from wrong, and they're not there to bring you in on a $9.99 oil change and then sell you the world. That's not what they do. When you come into the central part of Phoenix at I-10, or actually I-17, and Bell Road is Kurt's Automotive. Kurt's been around since 1987. I've known Kurt, but the thing about Kurt's Automotive is that he's done things for me that just made me look like a hero. I remember a lady who was told by numerous shops that she had a bad motor. And I said, is it drive? Yes. Does it make any noise? No. Ooh, no noise, no clatter, no nothing. Is there any dash lights on? No, there isn't. Okay, send her over to Kurt's. He puts a $11 oil pressure switch in it and sends her home and tells her everything is okay. That's what Kurt does. He has made me look like a genius and a hero. I can't tell you how many times, because people are around him. They live around him. And last but not least, 38th Avenue and Indian School is Larry Harker's Auto. I got to tell you, Bob and Ellen and Jeremy, I know them. And Bob's an old cowboy, so him and I have a lot to talk about. And, of course, Ellen can probably ride better than Bob, but nevertheless. What they did one time is I sent a car to them, and they had been given an estimate to replace something behind the glove box, typically the heater core, because there was a fluid leak behind the glove box of like $1,700. So I sent him over to Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and Bob calls me and he said, the drain tube on the air conditioning containment. We blow cold air through ductwork, and there's a drain tube that drips water on the ground, and everybody has seen it. If you've lived in Phoenix for any length of time, you've seen it. The drain tube's plugged up. So when you shake the car, I'm sitting in the passenger seat, the windows are all rolled up, and I got my technician shaking the car, and I can hear water sloshing around behind the glove box. So he says, I stick a thing up inside the vent, this little pincher thing, and I grab what I think is a bunch of stuff, and I pull it out, and water comes out like crazy. He said, it's all clean water. It's clear water. It's condensation. The vent was plugged up. It doesn't need a $1,700 heater core, and what's coming out of this is white water, white clear water, not blue coolant, not orange coolant, not purple coolant, not blue, nothing. It's just water. So somebody misdiagnosed it. We don't know if they meant to lie to the customer or if they were just, didn't have very many years of experience. We don't know the difference, but I think that was an $85 job. And so somebody had a $1,700 estimate. So you got to kind of wonder whether they knew that that was an easy one and they were going to hit him between the eyes with a big estimate to go in and dig out the heater core behind the glove box, which is a huge job. These are the kinds of shops that I have on my website, marksalem.com. Marksalem.com. There's good shops. I know them. I have their cell phone numbers. I know they do good work, and I'm sending you to places that I'm proud to be affiliated with. And they're just flat good guys. That's all there is to it. Last but not least, I got Nate over at Strictly Diesel. Nate knows he is a wizard on the Chevrolet, the Ford, and the Dodge diesel trucks. He's been around, and when you shake his hand and you get to talk to him, you'll understand why I think the world of Nate. Nate's up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They are diehard service, repair, and parts guys. And they do both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. They don't do big diesels, the big semis, Chevy, Ford, and Dodge. 1 ton, 3/4 ton, that's the sweet spot for Nate. So those are the shops that I can send you to, and I know that they'll take care of you. Here's my promise to you. If you use a shop and you have a problem, and it goes through a dispute resolution process, and someone tells the shop to make a refund, let's pretend the refund's $400, or to fix your car and the shop says no, if it's one of my shops, I'll give you the $400 or I'll fix the car. You have nothing to be afraid of. The next question is this. How many times has that happened, Mark? And since 1988, it's never happened. Never. Never, never. Now, we've kicked shops off our list in a quiet way. We've had shops that had problems in a quiet way. We just removed them from our list. But the idea is that I'm in the middle of this relationship, and I'm promising you they're going to do a good job. And if they don't, then you're going to file a nice complaint with somebody that can adjudicate it and explore it, like the Better Business Bureau. And then at the end of the day, if somebody tells the shop to do something and the shop doesn't, I will. That's how it works. And that's how it's worked since 1988. So you say, how many times has Mark ponied up cash out of his pocket? The answer is zero. Zero. I've never had to pay anything. I will if I have to, but it's just never got that far. And sometimes the problem is a miscommunication, and the customer thinks that this fixed that, when in reality, this fix something else. So when they had the struts replaced, they wanted the struts replaced, they thought it was going to fix the oil leak, and it didn't. The struts are a suspension component, and they have gas in them, they don't have oil in them. So the customer said, replace my struts. The car had 120,000 miles on it. They thought, well, he just wants to replace the front struts. They did that, they did the alignment, the tire wear was perfect, everything was fine, but the customer says the oil leak's still there. So I don't perform to the level he wants me to perform, which is go verbally abuse him and get my money back. So I said, file a complaint. It went through the adjudication process. Then they got other people involved, other mechanics, other technicians, other experts, and they found out that the oil leak he had was an engine oil leak, and it wasn't related to the struts, and he had misdiagnosed it and instructed the shop to fix it. at the end of the day, the shop ended up fixing the oil leak for him because it was something inexpensive. But he kind of caused the problem himself, and there's no hard feelings. That's just kind of what happened. So I've been in this business for a very long time, and I know right from wrong, and the shops that I refer you to, here's the reason I do that is because I can't possibly fix all the cars that want to come to my shop. I rarely tell you even where I'm from. The idea is there's really good shops, and we have geographically located the good ones in geographical locations all over the city of Phoenix and the surrounding areas. So we've got a list of good shops. Just go to marksalem.com and take a look at them. And, Gil, I'm thinking that no one's on the line waiting.
Actually, you have a caller. Wayne is Wayne? Your next caller.
Wayne, thank you very much for holding. How can I help you? Wayne? Hello, Wayne? I don't know what happened, but, Gil,
yeah,
did we lose Wayne?
Just keep talking.
Oh, Wayne, are you there? Wayne? Hello, Wayne? Wayne, I can't hear you.
Okay, we'll get back to Wayne, maybe.
Okay, Wayne, you might want to try to call back in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to have to be off the show in about 4 minutes. Wayne, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, go right ahead, sir. Tell me what the question is.
All right. I apologize. I had the phone on mute, so
okay.
Anyway, my fault. I have a 2011 Dodge Grand Caravan 3.6 liter engine. And anyway, when I bought it, it had 40,000 miles on it, almost 2 years ago. And it had, at that time, an anomaly of shift into drive and start to drive when you first started the car, and it would stutter when it went into first to second shift.
Okay.
That finally kind of worked its way out and went away. Anyway, now it's got 50,000 more miles on it. And it developed slop, what I call slop in the drivetrain. And the issue is that this was shift from reverse to drive, and it clunked. From drive to reverse, it would clunk. Sometimes you take your foot off the gas, slowing down on the freeway or something, it'd clunk.
Okay.
I took it to a shop that is a good shop. They diagnosed it motor mounts. So $800 later, we got four new motor mounts, and we're out the door. And it has the same problem, same clunks. So I've taken it back to them. The technician they used is young, I would say under 30, and I'm just not sure that he's diagnosing this right. He says, well, one of the motor mounts is bad. I just don't think that's...
Okay. All right, well, I got an easy answer for you, but I only got a minute and a half to tell you. I want you to call Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange, ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Call Phil, tell him Mark said that you could call him, and could you make an appointment, because you can demonstrate the problem and make an appointment with Phil, and he'll go with a ride with you, or one of his staff will, and they're going to watch you first make it happen, and then they're going to want to drive, and they'll do all that for nothing.
Thank you.
Okay. Automatic Transmission Exchange, and Phil is the owner. All right. For the rest of you, my email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, and you're welcome to give me a call, or send me an email, I should say. But I also want to tell you one more time. At the beginning of the show, we talked about a part in China. I'm going to recap that real quick for you. The part in China was made, and the guy made 25 cents on this motor mount in China. He made 25 cents on every motor mount. It was then shipped to the United States. The part was sold in China, completely manufactured, for $8.50. Remember that number, $8.50. It came into the United States, and of course it had to be boated in, and so there's transportation costs. Then the trucks take it to all the distribution centers in the United States.
1 minute.
And that costs money. And so by the time it gets to a jobber, which is a guy, I'm an installer, I own a shop, I'm going to install it, I buy it, and I'm paying somewhere in the vicinity of $45 to $50 for that motor mount. And then you're going to pay $73 when I install it in your car. The mount itself, it's going to go from $45 to $50 to $73. I'm going to make a profit on the part. So when you look at that, The only money that stayed on this $73 axle, the only money that stayed in China was $8.50. And the entire rest of it was made in transportation costs and stayed in the United States. I want you to remember that. China makes good parts. You know why? Because we give them the plans and we force them to do it right. And they do it right most of the time. But the bottom line is I'm getting a little tired of the China rap, and it's really kind of undeserved, and there's many that think the same way I do.